finding anything to eat as they go. So as they move on from one place to the next, they're not like coming upon some huge, you know, grove where they could easily find fruit or food. There, in fact, there's nothing but wilderness. And so if you can imagine your own family traveling with people of various ages and maybe some elderly people, maybe some young children, how long would you go before you started getting hungry? I know yesterday we drove up from Tennessee, and, you know, we would stop to eat, but it would seem like maybe an hour or two later, somebody says they want a snack or they want something to eat. I can't imagine going all day without eating, especially with children, much less any length of time longer than that, and how that would start to wear on you. So that's kind of the setting of where we're picking up in the story in chapter 16. And we'll begin right there in verse 1. They set out from Elim. That's the place where there was this kind of oasis. And all the congregation of the people of Israel came to camp in the wilderness of Sin. Now, that doesn't mean sin like we think of sin. That's just the name of the place, although it is kind of a fitting name, which is between Elim and Sinai on the 15th day of the second month after they had departed from the land of Egypt. Now, as they've gone, as it says there, the 15th day of the second month, this is probably a month and a half, if I understand that. So they're out of food. Verse 2 says, the whole congregation of the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the people of Israel said to them, oh, would that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt when we sat by the meat pots and ate bread to the full, for you brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. Now, I don't know what a meat pot is. It doesn't sound very appealing, does it? It almost reminds me of maybe potted meat. But I did think about my grandfather used to kill a goat once a year, and he had a big black cauldron. And they'd build a wood fire underneath it and just kind of cook on it all day long. And maybe that's this idea of a meat pot. But the thought is that they had plenty to eat. As bad as it was in Egypt, as bad as their life was, they at least had food. And, of course, now that they're hungry, they can't think about anything else. They've forgotten all the bad things that they hated, and they can only remember the good things, which was we had plenty to eat. And now here we are, and we're all going to starve to death out here in the wilderness. Now, this was showing a lack of faith, isn't it? Because the same God who had delivered them, who had already done amazing signs in the plagues that he brought, who had already parted the sea, who had already destroyed the army of the Egyptians, who had already provided water from a rock or made the sweet water or bitter water sweet, had already showed them that he was going to and capable of providing for them. And yet they say to God here, oh, we should have just died in Egypt because we're all going to starve to death. Well, notice this amazing statement in verse 4. The Lord said to Moses, behold, I am about to rain bread from heaven for you. Do you get the feeling that God just delights in sort of blowing people's minds with what he has in mind to do? I think he likes making those statements that he knows there's no way you can comprehend what he's saying. That it's bigger and better than anything you can imagine. How is God going to make rain bread from heaven? Here's this 2 million people starving to death, and God says, I'm about to rain bread out of the sky for you. And you know Moses must be thinking, wow, this is going to be something. You know, how is God going to do that? But notice what he goes on to say. And he says, I'm going to rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not. On the sixth day, when they are prepared what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather daily. So he says here, I'm going to rain this bread from heaven, and I'm going to include with it a test. In our lessons back home through this same series, I keep referring to a prophecy in Hosea where God says he taught his people to walk like a small child. He led them by the hands. And we see that here, that he's training them and he's teaching them, and this is a teaching moment. And so God is saying, I'm going to fix this problem. I'm going to bless them beyond what they can even imagine. But I'm also going to include with it some instructions and a test. So it's not only going to show them God's power and God's ability and God's love, but it's also going to hopefully teach them something important. And that's also obviously what we can learn from this as well. What is the test? Well, part of it is gather enough for one day. And there's some other instructions down in let's skip down to verse 9. Moses said to Aaron, say to the whole congregation of the people of Israel, come near before the Lord, for he has heard your grumbling. And as soon as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the people, they looked toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. And the Lord said to Moses, I have heard the grumbling of the people of Israel say to them, at twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread. Then you shall know that I am the Lord your God. Well, not only is he going to rain bread from heaven, he says, you're going to have meat to eat tonight. Now, you know, imagine you're standing out there, and as far as you can see, there's nothing. And there's 2 million people, and they're all going to be filled with meat. How is God going to do that? Well, verse 13 tells us, in the evening, quail came up and covered the camp. And in the morning, dew lay around the camp. And when the dew had gone up, there was on the face of the wilderness a fine flake-like thing, fine as frost on the ground. And when the people saw it, they said to one another, what is it? For they did not know what it was. And Moses said to them, it's the bread that the Lord has given you to eat. Interestingly, this question, what is it, sort of stuck and became the name of it, if I understand correctly. Down in verse 31, we're told that they called this stuff manna. It reminded me of this. Does anybody remember this candy bar called a whatchamacallit? So it's sort of like a, that's sort of the name of the manna. It's the what is it. And so they just started calling it whatchamacallit, or the what is it. And that's kind of their name for this bread from heaven. They didn't know what it was, and somehow that kind of became its name. Well, Moses gives them the instructions from God, which were, gather as much as you can eat. An omer per person in your tent. We don't really know. We don't use omers today. We don't, and there's not a lot of other references to it. But apparently it's been estimated to be maybe a couple of quarts. So, but it would be enough food for you to eat for a whole day. And so the idea was if you had six people in your tent, you get that much, you know, per person. And that was enough for one day for food. And in verse 19, Moses said to them, let no one leave any of it over till the morning. But they did not listen to Moses. Some left part of it till the morning, and it bred worms and stank. And Moses was angry with them. Now, these instructions sound pretty simple, right? God's going to rain bread out of heaven, and here's what you got to do. You go out in the morning, you get enough for you to eat today, and don't keep it overnight. But think about how that would have tested them. Because if they've been starving to death, and there's food out there on the ground, and you're only going to get enough to eat today, what does that mean you're going to have to do about tomorrow? You're going to have to trust God, right? You're going to have to trust Him. If I only go out there and get enough for now, and I don't get any more than that, I'm going to have faith about tomorrow. See, you see God taking them by the hands and teaching them to have faith and teaching them what it means to trust in Him. There was more instructions. There was going to be on the seventh day, there wasn't going to be any bread. So on Friday, before Saturday, there's go out and get twice as much bread that day. And then you'll have some and don't go out and look for it the next morning. And verse 24, skipping down to there, they laid it aside till the morning. That was on the Friday. They carried some extra. As Moses commanded them, it did not stink, and there were not worms in it. And Moses said, eat it today, for today is the Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather, but on the seventh day, which is the Sabbath, there will be none. Do you think they obeyed this time? Some of them did, but some of them didn't. We're told on verse 27, on the seventh day, some of the people went out to gather, but they found none. The Lord said to Moses, how long will you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? See, the Lord has given you the Sabbath. Therefore, on the sixth day, he gives you bread for 2 days. Remain each of you in his place. Let no one go out of his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. And so we see, and this is where we'll stop in our account this morning, in God's training up his people and teaching them to walk and guiding them, he's been very, very, very patient. But you get the feeling already at the end of this chapter that his patience is running out. And he's been patient with them when they grumbled. He's been patient when they didn't follow the rules. And he's being patient with them still. But he's saying, how long is this going to go on? He's expecting them at some point to start learning. At some point, they need to start trusting. At some point, they need to start following directions, because that's what God expects out of his people. And so, leaving that now, let's think about some applications for this concept of the bread from heaven. What does that have to do with us as we sit here a long ways away from there and a long ways in time away from them? What does that have to do with us today? Well, first of all, I think we can see that God is clearly unhappy with their grumbling against him. In fact, most things I remember as children, we learned this, that the Israelites grumbled in the wilderness. I don't know why that kind of sticks in my mind, but I've heard other kids say the same thing. For some reason, that kind of, they murmured, or whatever those words are, the kind of an onomatopoeia for for making this sort of, you know, not happy about this. And they grumbled, they complained. Look up back in verse 8, still there in Exodus 16. Moses said, when the Lord gives you in the evening meat to eat and in the morning bread to the field, because the Lord has heard your grumbling, that you grumble against him, what are we? Your grumbling is not against us, but against the Lord. Why do you suppose that God hated it when they grumbled and murmured? Why did that bother him? What difference does it make if they're happy about it or they're not? Well, maybe we can imagine, we can understand if we kind of try to put ourselves in somewhat of a similar circumstance. Imagine that you invite some people over. Let's say you invite the young people that you know, maybe from the church here, some young people over to your home. And so you invite them over and you're going to feed them supper. And while you're getting things ready, they're sitting in the other room. And this is, you start to hear them say, how long is it going to be till we eat? I'm hungry. There's nowhere to sit. We need more couch space. Is there anything to do here? Are there games to play? I'm kind of bored. What are we having anyway? What do they have to drink? I don't really care for that. Do they have some of this? Oh, man, I don't really want to eat. Do we have to stay? Are we going to have to stay a long time? Is there going to be enough? What if that's all you heard while you're trying to do something nice and you're working to prepare to feed these people and all you hear is complaining about what they don't like? What would you think? You would probably wish that you could just kick them out, you know, but you wouldn't, right? You would feed them anyway, but would you want to have them over again? And wouldn't you think, well, these people are very ungrateful. They're not appreciating anything that's being done for them. They must be a bunch of spoiled brats because all they do is, you know, pick apart what they have and they don't like this and they're just not thankful, and it would be irritating to us. So imagine if you're God and He has now delivered, He's done all these things for these people, and yet all they do constantly is complain. And complaining is the opposite of being thankful. And that is how I think this fits very well in with the week that we have here. To tie it in with the New Testament passage, Paul simply says in Philippians 2:14, do all things without grumbling or disputing. It was irritating to God in the Old Testament, it's irritating to God today. He wants His people to be thankful. And we could list a host of New Testament passages where we're told to be thankful. And I would suggest to you that it's impossible at the same time to be grateful and to be grumbling. I don't know that you can do both of those things simultaneously. Be thankful and be complaining. Because if we're thankful, we're thinking about how I've been blessed. Had Israel been blessed to this point? Over and over and over and over and over. Have we been blessed? And that's what we're going to hopefully spend this week thinking about. And some people have been, I've seen on Facebook, spending the whole month, you know, thinking of things to be thankful. It's a good thing to focus on how have I been blessed. And if I'm thinking about all the ways God's blessed me, I'm going to be a lot less likely to be complaining about things. Now, one other question about this. Is God saying to them, I don't want to hear about your trouble. Keep it to yourself. Don't bother me with your problems. Is that the lesson? That's not the lesson here. If you had children who are hungry and you're walking in the wilderness and they're crying because they haven't had anything to eat, God, I believe, wants to know about that. So what should they have done? They could have come to Moses. They could have called out to God. They could have prayed for food. But there's a difference between asking and praying and then trusting that God will provide versus just grumbling, which is this sort of under your breath, muttering, mumbling, complaining, I don't like, it's not good. And so the lesson for us is when something is bad, God doesn't want us to think of Him as the kind of God who says, I don't want to hear your problems. You know, you just keep that to yourself. Nobody wants to hear your problems. And even we can share those with each other. We are to, you know, rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep. We when we have troubles in our lives, we can share those with somebody. But again, there's a difference between praying about something and trusting in God and sharing this versus having an attitude of ungratefulness and just complaining and picking apart and pointing out what's bad all the time. And that is the attitude that God was unpleased with in them, and that's the same attitude that God will not be pleased with in us. I think the next thing about this that's interesting is that God told them to only get enough for each day. And that is what was He teaching them? I already alluded to that a little bit, this would require an amount of faith on their part to only get enough food for today. And of course, you remember when His disciples said, teach us how to pray. And Jesus taught them a very simple prayer. And one of the main parts of that prayer, especially as it relates to our physical needs, was he said, ask God, give us this day our daily bread. Give me what I need for today. Do we have the attitude, that we seek from God what I need for today? And then, if I have that, I'm content. That's tough. Because what would we really rather have? Instead of having enough for today, wouldn't we really rather have things taken care of for a long time? I mean, we would prefer to have a stock room with food for, you know, months or more. We'd prefer to have an account, and we'd prefer to have, you know, residual interest. We'd prefer to have all these things so that we could say, I've got things taken care of for not only the rest of this week, but I'd like to have things taken care of for the rest of the month. And wouldn't it be kind of neat if you could just have things taken care of for the whole rest of the year? And in fact, when we think about, in fact, some level of success, especially in our country, is that sort of the dream level of success would be to be one of these people who has enough wealth built up that they've got everything taken care of for the foreseeable future. And there are people that wealthy, right? That they have enough stuff that they could literally say, I don't have to worry about what I'm going to eat for the rest of my life. And most people would say, now that is success. That's the goal. That's what you want. You want to be at that point where you never have to worry about anything because everything's been taken care of. There's a danger in that goal. And Jesus illustrates this in Luke chapter 12. Turn with me to Luke chapter 12. He tells a story about a man who had that same goal, and he was sort of able to accomplish it. And Jesus tells us about the danger in that very aspiration, that very idea. In Luke chapter 12, beginning in verse 15, he said, take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. And he told them a parable saying, the land of a rich man produced plentifully. And he thought to himself, what shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops. And he said, I'll do this. I will tear down my barns. I'll build bigger barns. I will store all my grain and my goods. I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry. And we would say, that's the dream. That's what people want. That's what, when people are looking to be successful, this is it. They want to have such success that they have it set aside, that they have it put, that they can say to themselves, I can now go on that cruise and I can kick back and I can just relax because I've got everything taken care of. And yet, what happens? Verse 20, but God said to him, fool, this night your soul is required of you. The things you have prepared, whose will they be? So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. What's the man's fatal mistake? Was it in being blessed? That's not the problem, right? In fact, where do blessings come from? They come from God. He wasn't condemned because he had a lot of things. What he's condemned for is his selfish approach to them. And covetousness and worldliness produces or feeds a selfishness. Notice again what the man said. First of all, in verse 17. He thought to himself, what shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops. And he said, I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. There I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Can you even tell from this account if the man had a family? If he's even married? You can't tell that there's anybody else on the whole planet but him when he starts talking, right? As he's thinking about these things, he's looking at it and he's saying, ooh, this is a good problem. What am I going to do with all this? I'm going to tear it on my, It's almost like suddenly every other person on the planet just vanishes from his mind. And all he can think about is how this huge blessing is going to make his life easy from now on. And he's not thinking that there's maybe needy people he could share it with. There's other people in the world. There's other things he could do. He's not thinking about God, how he could glorify God. He's solely consumed with himself. And that is covetousness, and that is this greed that Jesus is warning them about. When people have a desire to hoard and make their lives better. And you can almost imagine, you know, somebody who sees all that manna all over the ground when they wake up. And so when, you know, they're trying to just pack their tent, they want as much as they can. And that's kind of sadly capitalism gone awry, right? When you, at its ugliest and worst, it's every man get as much as you can pile up and claim for yourself. And sometimes it brings out that side of people that we want to hoard up and pile up as big a stack as I can get for me. And if we're not careful, we begin to focus simply on ourselves. What Jesus says instead is, ask and be content with this day my daily bread. Having food and clothing, Paul says, let us therewith be content. Sometimes you hear someone complain and they'll say, I'm just living paycheck to paycheck. Well, even if that's true, then that means God's providing for you, doesn't it? If you're living paycheck to paycheck, then you're being provided for, and that's okay. And if some of the, I haven't, you know, not many people in our world, in our culture, experience this. I've heard of people who didn't know where their next meal was going to come from. I've never had to experience that. I've never even, you know, lived in a time when I didn't know where I'd find food for the next day. But we ought to have the kind of faith and trust. And that's what God expected them to have, to say, if I've got what I need for today, I'm going to trust God for tomorrow and keep working and all that. Does it mean it's wrong to be blessed? No, there are people who are blessed throughout the Bible. But God doesn't want us to become selfish with that. He wants us to be content with having our daily bread. Okay, the final application of this for this morning is that God demands obedience. God said, in this case, I'm going to bless the people and I'm going to see if they're going to obey me. And He gave them some simple instructions. Gather enough manna for each person for one day. Don't keep it overnight. On the sixth day, get twice as much. And on the seventh day, don't get any. If I haven't missed any, those are four instructions. So here He says, I'm going to rain bread from heaven. I'm giving you four directions. Everybody can understand those directions. None of this was complicated. But there's something interesting about all four of those instructions. All four of them go against our own human wisdom and intuition. Consider the first one. Only get enough for today. Well, if you're the head of a household and you have hungry people, or let's just say you're all by yourself and you're hungry, and you haven't eaten for several days, and you go out in the morning and the surface of the ground is covered in food, what is the only sensible thing to do? Get as much of that stuff as you can get, right? Because we're out here in the middle of nowhere, and who knows where we're going to have something to eat again. So it only makes sense from a human point of view to pile up as much as you can possibly fit into your tent, and therefore you'll be, I mean, that's just being smart from a human point of view, right? Now, He said, don't keep any till tomorrow. Does that make any sense? If you haven't eaten in several days and you have a sudden supply of food, or should you just eat what you have now? Or should you not, like, eat just a tiny bit and hold on to it, and maybe it'll, like, last you for two or three more days? So you're going to ration it out. But what happens when they disobeyed and they held some? Maybe they tried to figure out a way to preserve it. They put it in a pot. It turned into worms, and Moses was angry at them. Why was he angry? Because they didn't follow the directions. But from a human point of view, it only makes sense to try to save some of that. Now, they did that, and then on the sixth day, He said, get twice as much today and save some for tomorrow. Now, what would you say if you were there? Moses, I tried that on Monday. You know, you got mad at me, number one. Number two, it rotted and it got worms in it. So I'm not going to save any for tomorrow because it's going to have worms in it. So from a human point of view, this instruction doesn't make any sense. What do we find out? It didn't have worms in it because they were doing what God said to do. On the fourth one was, on Saturday, don't go out and look for any. Now, every morning, all week long, there's been food on the ground. And I'm just not supposed to go out and look for any on Saturday? Why wouldn't there be food on Saturday? If there's been food on the ground Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, why wouldn't there be food on the ground on Saturday? So from a human point of view, all of these instructions don't make sense from an earthly perspective. But what is the point of all of them? God had said to Moses that He was going to test him. He said back in Exodus 16, verse 4, I'm going to rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not. The point is simply that God said, I'm going to shower them with a blessing and I'm going to give them a rule. And the purpose of the rule is to see if they'll obey me. And I think we get a picture there of how God deals with people. You go all the way back to the Garden of Eden. And God says, I'm putting you here. It's a paradise. There's as much as there's every kind of food you could want to eat. There's all these trees. I'm giving you a rule. Why did he give him a rule? Did he have to give him a rule? That's what God, that's what he does. That's how he chooses to do it. He gives it, he blesses us beyond our wildest dreams, and he gives us a rule. And I think part of it is so that he can sit back and say, are they going to listen to me or not? Are they going to obey or are they going to disobey? And sometimes the rules from our perspective may not make any sense. And we may not appreciate it. We may not think that, you know, we may say, why? Why should I have to do it? What difference does it make? Why should we have to obey the law of the land? Why should we have to assemble on a regular basis? Why should a wife have to submit to her husband? That doesn't make any sense from a human point of view. Why should it be this way? Why should somebody have to get dunked in water? What difference does that make? If somebody wants to be saved and they believe, well, why do we have to get wet? That doesn't even make any sense from a human point of view. What's the point of all of it? Maybe the point is simply that God is saying, I'm giving you an instruction so I can see if you're going to obey me. And that's exactly what he says he was doing here with them. And they didn't do it, and God was upset with them. Obeying is realizing who God is and who we are. Jesus says in Luke 6:46, why do you call me Lord and not do what I tell you? If they understood that the same God who told them, you know, just get enough for today, don't keep it till the morning, it's the same God who caused the bread to fall on the ground to begin with, the same God who parted the sea, he's God, you're a person. If for no other reason, do what he said because he's God and you're not. And Jesus says, I'm your Lord. And if you claim me as your Lord, what sense does that make if you don't do what I say? So from our point of view, if we recognize and we say that I follow Jesus, then whether what he says is what I would say if I was making the rules, or whether it makes sense to me, or whether I like the idea of it or not, we obey simply because he's our Lord, and we obey because we love him. John 14:15, he said, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. God had shown his love to the Israelites over and over. They should have loved him in return, and that love would be naturally include just obeying his directions. The same thing is true for us. So here's the takeaway for this morning, for your lesson. Stop whining and complaining. Be content with what we have. Trust God for our daily bread and do what he tells us. It's a pretty simple lesson, wouldn't you agree? And yet, the Israelites struggled with this. It was hard for them. I think it's just hard for people in general. I don't think they were any different than we are. These are very easy to understand, but tough to put into practice because it requires faith on our part and it requires giving up our own sort of control over things. And so this morning, perhaps you understand some instruction of the Lord that you need to obey. I don't know everybody's circumstance in the audience this morning. If you're not a Christian, but you know that Jesus is the Son of God, as we've talked about, and maybe you balked at some of his instructions like being baptized and you just didn't understand the point of it, just think of it this way. It may just be that he gave us that instruction to see who would have the faith to do what he tells us and who wouldn't. Whether I understand it or not, it's just a simple matter of doing what he told us to do. If there's any way that we can help you this morning to do what he tells us to do, let us know while we stand and sing.
You and me, let us haste, oh haste to its brink. 'Tis the fount of love from the source above, and he bids us all freely drink. Will you come to the fountain free? Will you come, 'tis for you and me. Thirsty soul, hear the welcome call, 'tis a fountain open for all. There's a living stream with a crystal gleam, from the throne of light now it flows, while the water Will you come to the fountain free? Will you come just for you and me? Thirsty soul, hear the welcome call. 'Tis a fountain open for all. There's a rock that's cleft, and no soul is left that may not its pure water share. 'Tis for you and me and this stream. I see, let us hasten joyfully there.
Will you come
to the fountain free? Will you come just for you and me?
Thirsty soul,
hear the welcome call. Is a fountain open for all.